Welcome to the second hour of the WINY Talk Show. Call 928-1350 to be heard. Telephone lines are open, so call now.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show as we begin our second hour. And joining us on the line this morning, Second District Congressman and Chair of the House Sea Power and Projections Forces Subcommittee, Congressman Joe Courtney. Good morning, Congressman. Welcome back.
Good morning, Dave. I'm just landed in Washington a few hours ago, but it's nice to be talking to folks back home.
Absolutely. Well, it's nice to have you. And and boy, I added your title as chair of that subcommittee because there are some important developments this week that you really led the charge for that will bring more business to EB. Tell us about it.
So last night, at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the Navy announced publicly a new contract with Electric Boat, which again has been in the works for actually 10 years. If you go back to the origins of the design work leading up to this new class of submarines called the Columbia program. And again, the contract that was signed and announced last night is to pay for the first two subs out of the 12 that are going to be built in the Columbia program. Again, just to put it in context, the existing construction of Virginia-class subs that are happening down at Groton right now, those are big vessels. The Columbia program subs are going to be 2.5 times the size of Virginia-class subs. So these are massive platforms that, again, are replacing the existing Ohio-class fleet, which was built back in the 80s and 90s, and which is aging out. And so so if you look at the price tag, again, it was a $10 billion contract that was announced for the first two subs. That's called a block buy. Buy them in blocks of multiples. And, again, what that means is really the horizon and the commitment by the government extends now well into probably about 2027. And again, we're talking about a program that's going to build 12 of these. So it's really about two decades of work. And again, from a workforce standpoint, from an economic engine standpoint, obviously that is a massive new infusion into Eastern Connecticut. The supply chain, which again, the way they're building subs these days is much more dependent on supply chain feeding into the shipyard. So that means more work for a lot of the smaller machine shops, metal trade factories. And again, there's a lot of them in Eastern Connecticut, and frankly, they're going to need more because of the magnitude of this contract. And this afternoon, my subcommittee is actually going to be voting on what they call the mark or the bill for shipbuilding for the Navy for 2021's budget. And we are incorporating language to authorize the contract that was announced last night, the Columbia contract that was announced last night. We are also going to be voting on the ongoing work in the Virginia program. Much to people's surprise, the budget that came over from the White House back in February actually cut a submarine out of the budget. And, they've been building two Virginias a year going back to 2011. This would have cut that production rate back to one. Again, the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Gilday, testified before our committee saying that he wants that back because the size of the fleet is declining because of the retirement of the old Los Angeles class sub. So anyway, we are going to restore that this afternoon with the mark. Working on a very bipartisan basis, my ranking member, Rob Whitman from Virginia, Republican, we talk constantly with each other and, work through this language. And, we're expecting a very successful meeting this afternoon.
Congressman, do you ever get pushback? Because sometimes we hear it on the show that why are we investing so much more money in our military when there are other programs that would affect society or improve society, life in general, but we're pouring a lot of money into the military?
So we definitely get those kinds of calls, and I get asked that a lot. And it's a totally good question to ask because these budgets are large. I mean, these are big numbers that we're talking about here. But I would just sort of point out that, you know, when we last year we modified the what was called the Budget Control Act that had capped federal spending going back to 2011, actually, is when that law passed. And the agreement that was signed lifted the caps for defense and non-defense. Non-defense, the cap was lifted by 5%. Defense was capped, the cap was raised by 2%. So, you know, I actually think that you look at, there clearly is, I think, a recognition that, you know, we need to invest in education and healthcare and the environment. And you know, certainly the COVID bills, you know, which now already, you know, run up about $3 trillion in spending, there's virtually nothing in there for defense. And there shouldn't, I mean, appropriately so. I mean, this is a pandemic, and you know, we obviously need to invest in, you know, the public health infrastructure, supporting people's income with the recession that's hit, et cetera. So I would just say that, you know, I think based on the cap arrangement that we agreed to, the COVID commitment that's coming through Congress, you know, our country is really is paying attention to domestic needs. But I also believe that we need to invest in our national defense. It's, the world doesn't sort of hit the pause button. And we know there are actors out there, particularly, you know, in terms of regions of the world that are critical to trade and, you know, strengthen our allies in places like the, you know, Indo-Pacific region, as well as Europe, that, you know, we still need to have a stable investment in our national defense. That is not to say every penny is sacred, but I would argue that when you look at, you know, our country as a maritime country, which it is, you know, that having a Navy, and that's actually in Article 1 of the Constitution, that's Congress's, it shall provide for a Navy. There was a recognition even by our founders that, you know, the maritime realm, the maritime domain is something that is intrinsic to our country. And if you look at the spectrum of, you know, the fleet that we have, there's just no question that the work that's done in Groton is by far the most effective. And that's why, you know, Admiral Gilday came out vociferously in terms of the need for making sure that the reduction in the fleet size, which is happening, there are about 53 today submarines in the fleet. Even at the two-a-year build rate, we're still not replacing as fast as we're retiring. So we're probably going to be closer to a fleet of about 42 or 43 by 2028. So I would just, you know, share that with you that, you know, the point is valid and needs to be discussed, and I'm happy to do it, and I do it all the time. But I do think that, you know, we can sort of walk and chew gum at the same time. We can provide for the domestic needs of this country, but also make sure, and history has taught us bitter lessons about, you know, really just neglecting the fact that, you know, we live in a world which is contested in ways by, you know, by actors that are malign, and that we need to at least maintain our national defense to protect our country.
What does this contract award represent as far as jobs go?
So right now, the workforce at Groton and Quonset Point is roughly about 17,000. Again, two-thirds in Connecticut, one-third in Rhode Island. Engineering and design workforce actually is the predominant piece in Connecticut, and so you know, there's still a lot of that work that still needs to be done with the Columbia program, and also in this, you know, budget that we're going to vote on this afternoon, there's more new investment in new R&D, so that work that piece of the workforce is going to remain stable. But clearly, you know, this is a contract for production, and that means, you know, people who are cutting steel and, you know, doing the shipwright work and the electrical work and the carpentry work and the machinist work. So this is actually going to really, I know, is going to boost the metal trades side of the workforce even higher than it is today. So I think we're going to see a workforce top line grow to about 20,000, possibly even 21,000, 22,000. And again, it's just another sort of major demand signal to our education and job training system that, you know, we've got to make sure that all the good work that's being done at Quinnebog and you know, Steve LaPointe and the crew up there on the metal trades.
Congressman, were you listening to the show earlier? Because Steve LaPointe was on with us talking about exactly that.
Well, he's a prophet. I'm a big fan of Steve. I was not listening. I was probably getting my luggage right. and BWI. So, but he is at the cutting edge in terms of where the good jobs are going to be.
Excellent. Congressman, I want to shift a little bit if we can. Yeah. I've got a couple of other things that I wanted to just get an update from you on. The HEROES Act, where does that currently stand?
So, again, we passed it in the House on May 15th. It is still in the Senate inbox. They are back in town, the Senate is, and what we're seeing is there's really been a shift now in terms of a recognition that another fiscal stimulus bill is still required given the weakness of the economy. And, you know, we all want a V-shaped recovery. I'm, you know, waving my hand, you know, mm-hmm. you know, in agreement with that. But the bottom line is the unemployment claims still come pouring in. And again, the situation for state and local government continues to erode in terms of tax revenue. And the HEROES Act really was aimed at trying to buttress that. So, Senator McConnell, who initially completely dismissed the HEROES Act and the state and local support, now has pretty much signaled that he would be willing to consider another bill of up to $1 trillion. Peter Navarro, who is one of the economists in the White House, was on one of the talk shows and said, actually, the White House is looking at more like $2 trillion. Politico this morning says President Trump said he wants to do another round of economic impact payments, which has got some blowback within, you know, the White House there. I actually think probably by next week or right after July 4th, you know, we're really going to start seeing something, you know, come into focus with the Senate, because we're just waiting for them to do it. And by the way, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is hardly, you know, a big fan of government spending, they came out for local and state assistance a couple days ago because they realized that, you know, the magnitude of the revenue loss that's happening right now, there's only two ways that the states are going to be able to handle that on their own, which is, number one, to lay a lot of people off, which is not good for the economy, or two, raise taxes. And the chamber basically said it's better to have a short-term emergency stabilization and avoid either one of those scenarios. And I think they're right in terms of the way they see that.
How about police reform?
So on Thursday, we are going to take up the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. Again, this is a reform bill. It's not a defunding bill. It is aimed at best practices, which, you know, just talking to police departments in Eastern Connecticut over the last couple of weeks, I can, you know, confirm that things like body cameras, you know, treating the neck as a red zone, as one of the police chiefs said, you know, just no, you know, ban on chokeholds. The you know, training to really root out the practice of racial profiling, which we know happens out there. It's just the numbers don't lie, and the stories of people, you know, are true, you know, in terms of what they're describing out there. There is going to be a modification of the civil liability protection, the qualified immunity, which again, there's some controversy in the Senate regarding that provision. Clarence Thomas opposes qualified immunity, you know, conservative Supreme Court justice. So this is a doctrine which is not in law and which really has kind of grown up over time and really has protected bad actors and really bad things in terms of, you know, people getting civil justice. So that, I think, really kind of is the rundown of what the bill is. I mean, it's obviously, you know, it has more content. If any of the listeners are curious, be happy to share that with you if you email the office. And again, I would just say I've been talking to police chiefs, many of whom have already adopted a number of these practices, and I think they're very clear-eyed and realistic that, you know, the public is really looking for a response here, and having a reform package really is the response that the vast majority of Americans, Republicans and Democrats, if you look at all the polls, are looking for. So, you know, the Senate is taking up a version which is clearly not as robust. And, you know, right now there's that drama that always seems to go on over there in terms of just, you know, whether they're going to let debate proceed forward and whether they're going to allow amendments. But I think, you know, people should be very careful about just letting things die in the vine. I mean, we really need to see some action in the House on Thursday, and it'll be probably around 10 o'clock at night, Thursday night, looking at the schedule, that package is going to clear the House. And we understand that it needs to go to conference committee, and you know, people have to be, you know, open-minded about different ideas and different approaches. But to do nothing or to just let it kind of stall would be really, I think, very much tone deaf to what the vast majority of the public is looking for.
Speaking of drama,
yeah,
we've had quite a conversation here on the show, and it's been ongoing, about statues and about historical representations. How much was the statuary hall or the speaker portraits discussed among all of you?
So, again, we've been having caucus calls, and this was definitely a topic that, you know, came up. I think that, you know, writing to the clerk and certainly notifying the states that, you know, that there's definitely pushback in terms of those particular individuals being given really a place of high honor. I mean, this is not a museum. You know, when we talk about the Statuary Hall, this is really, you know, a monumental place, a place that really honors people. And, you know, I deplore, you know, the vandalism that's going on there. It makes me crazy, you know, when I hear stories about tearing down Ulysses S. Grant, you know, out in California there. I mean, it's just like, it leaves you speechless at the stupidity of actions like that. But I do think that, you know, for example, the U.S. Navy ordered the Confederate battle flag to be removed from all ships and submarines. I think Admiral Gilday is doing the right thing, and the Commandant of the Marine Corps is doing the same thing in terms of his service. I mean, there has to be a recognition that, yes, it's history, but it does not need to be honored. And that's really the difference that I see. Put them in museums, you know, put them in places where, you know, students and you know, tourists or whatever want to sort of see things, but the place of honor is different, and that's really where I draw the line.
Congressman, before we let you go, I just want to remind folks, we've gotten some questions. Your staff in both Connecticut and Washington, D.C. are working. If people want to contact your office, can they, and how should they?
Absolutely. So our Norwich office is open, and we have people there every day. Again, some of the staff works remotely. We try to keep the density down a little bit. But 860-886-0139, and I think it's courtney.house.gov, is, you know, gets you to the website where you can also email us. And, I was just on a staff call before picking up the phone with you, Dave. And, again, we're still getting calls about the you know, the economic impact payments. We're still getting calls about unemployment comp. We're still getting calls about VA. So, you know, the staff is still cranking it.
Excellent. Thank you for checking in, sharing that news with us this morning, taking a few questions, and we'll connect with you again real soon.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Have a good day.
Thank you. Same to you.
Yep.
Congressman Joe Courtney on the line with us this morning. Let's take a break. We've got some calls on hold. We'll get right back to open forum. Stay tuned.